And we are on air. This is Monday night, April the 15th, and we are here for our Texas NASCAR race review and Hot Topic Sound Off. We're going to start with some short track news and updates, and we'll also update the ARCA Menards, the ARCA East, and the ARCA West series. They did not race this past weekend, but they will be racing next weekend. We'll make sure you have all the details. Afterward, we're going to comment on the post-race media interview with the NASCAR Xfinity Series winner, Sam Mayer. He's the driver of the number one Junior Motorsports Chevrolet, and it was an amazing finish in the Xfinity Series, and I'm sure we'll hear about that in that media interview. Then after we listen to it, then Sal and I will comment. After that, we're going to review the NASCAR Truck Series, the NASCAR Xfinity, and the NASCAR Cup Series races that all took place at Texas Motor Speedway this past weekend. And, of course, as always, we're going to end our episode with the Hot Topic Sound Off conversation with our Fan for Racing crew. So definitely looking forward to that tonight as well. Sal should be here shortly. He's our co-host for tonight. I'm going to go ahead and get into some of the news, short track news that we have on tap here. And let me bring that up here in just a second. I thought I had it, but I want to make sure that I've got all the information here for all of you. Okay, I'm going to start off with some of the dirt news that we have in the world of outlaw sprint cars. David Gravel kept the good times rolling on Friday, leading wire to wire in the feature at the Federated Auto Parts Raceway at I-5. Alex Knighton over at worldofoutlaws.com writes about that, and you can learn more about that race. But in the next day's return to the track, it was Donnie Schatz who fired back with a commanding win at the Missouri Oval. Again, Alex Knighton writes about it over at the World of Outlaws. On the high limit racing side, it was Anthony Macri who beat Tyler Courtney in an eventful A-Main at Texas Motor Speedway. So that was an exciting race. Also, with regard to the World of Outlaws late models, Nick Hoffman kicked off the Illini 100 weekend and another photo finish win over Bobby Pierce. Matt Skipper writes about it over at worldofoutlaws.com. Pierce, however, responded the following day, leading the last 48 laps to take the Illini 100 at Farmer City Raceway. Again, it was Matt Skipper writing about that over at theworldofoutlaws.com. All right, Richie Murray has a nice article over at USAC, and his seventh race with Rocksteady Racing, Kevin Thomas Jr. got back to the top of the field in the USAC sprint car action at Lawrenceburg Speedway. And then Cody Swanson is set to return at Toledo Speedway. That's months after he severely broke his left foot. That he has sustained that injury on Christmas Day. So it'll be good to see Cody Swanson set to return at Toledo Speedway. Richie Murray writes about that over at Short USAC Media. Sal Segale is here. So first of all, welcome to the show, Sal.
Oh, thank you, Sharon.
All right. I'm over at our notes over on our team's thread. I've taken care of all the dirt news, but some short track news. Do you want to start there, Sal?
Okay. Yeah, here we are. Car store. Bobby McCarty is back. He said so himself. McCarty triumphed at Saturday's car store showdown at the New River All-American Speedway. That came from Matt Weaver over at Short Track Scene.
Also, Super Southern Super Series, Matt Craig is the winner once more. Craig snapped a winless drought with a victory in the Rumble by the River 125 out at Montgomery Motor Speedway. Again, there's an article about that over at Short Track Scene by Matt Weaver.
And then we've got Blake Stallings and Jacob Moore split a pair of 275-lap features at the Virginia Oval. Matt Weaver has that story at Short Track Scene.
And just so everybody knows, the Virginia Oval is South Boston Speedway. Out at Florence Motor Speedway, another set of twin 40s were swept by Casey Kelly, though it took a photo finish to make it happen. That photo finish seemed to be a theme of the weekend. So read about that by Matt Weaver over at Short Track Scene. And then there's a really familiar name over in the Cars Tour.
Bell. Yeah, there is. His name is Dellerhart Jr. was present in the field at the Cars Tour on Saturday. His 14th place result didn't go to plan, but the race weekend provided a nice mix of priorities for Earnhardt. And Matt Weaver has that story over at Short Track Scene.
Okay. We've got some other stories from Racing America as well as Short Track Scene and Flow Racing. And unfortunately, my formatting doesn't seem to work on here. But Switzer, Nasella, McDonald, they headlined the Northeast Classic winners at New Hampshire. So you'll want to read about that over at Racing America.
And then Keelan Harvick wins the Legend feature over at New River.
Yes, yes, that was really cool. He raced in the Legends and came home with the victory. So they had that on Flow Racing, but there's an article about it over at Racing America. And then Josh Smith dominates.
And then, don't forget, he also finished second in his first stock race, too.
He had two races this weekend, a little bit of double duty for Keelan Harvick. Josh Smith dominated the Boers Welding CRA late model sportsman season. You can read all about that over at Racing America.
And then USAC Sprint Cars Justin Owen Memorial at Lawrenceburg. That's over on Flow Racing.
Yeah, they've got the full results of that race, so that's really cool. And then also Stephen Nassy wins the Show Me the Money feature out at Montgomery's late model race. You can read about that at Racing America.
And then from there, then you go to Kubota High Limit Racing at Texas Motor Speedway. They have the results of that over at Flow Racing.
And then at Short Track Scene, Dakota Armstrong claims a 500 Tour opener at Anderson Speedway. So really big congratulations for Dakota Armstrong there.
And then from there, then you go to Carson Lofton claims his fourth Smart Tour win in six races, and that's over on Short Track Scene.
Yes, indeed. A lot of racing action this past weekend, so really cool to see that happening in the dirt and short track scenes around the racetracks around the country. I'm also going to give you... I mentioned it earlier, the ARCA Menards Series, they did not race this past weekend, but they have a couple of races coming up this weekend, Sal. One of them is going to be out there by you. The other one's going to be at Talladega Super Speedway this weekend, the General Tire 200 on April 20th at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1, so don't miss the action with the ARCA Menards Series being back on track. But the ARCA West is going to be racing this weekend as well. Are you going to Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway this weekend, Sal?
Yeah, I'll be out there this weekend up in Bakersfield for the race.
Okay. The race is the MMI Oil Workers 150 presented by the West Coast Stock Car Motorsports Hall of Fame. That will be on April the 20th, but this race will be at 11:15 p.m. Eastern time. I believe that would be 8:15 your time, right, Sal?
Yes.
And we can watch it. For those of us that can't get out to the racetrack, it will be available via live streaming over on Flow Racing. So definitely looking forward to seeing what the ARCA Menards Series and ARCA West Series do this weekend. I'm so excited that they're back on track.
Yeah, they're finally getting it. I guess they're going to run a SRL Pro Late race along with the ARCA Menards West Series race.
Oh, nice. Nice. That'll be a lot of fun then. It'll be a big weekend. And if you're wondering when the ARCA Menards Series East is going to be back in action, well, that's going to be the following week, April the 26th at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll be racing the General Tire 150 out at Dover Motor Speedway, and that, too, will be televised on Fox Sports 1. So a lot of that racing action to look forward to here across the ARCA Menards platform. Okay, we will preview that race on the two races this Thursday, and then the following race we'll be previewing next Thursday. So stay tuned for more information with regard to those races coming up then. All right. Anything else you want to add to our short track news, Sal?
No, that's really about it. We're finally going to get a clear weekend in and get some racing in. We were supposed to run the cars tour this past Saturday, and once again it got rained out. So this is already our fifth rainout in six races.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. And in a place that you would least suspect a rainout to happen.
Yeah. I mean, during the week, like last week and Thursday, it was 80 degrees. And then Saturday it rained. Saturday and Sunday it rained.
Wow. Wow. That's incredible. Okay. I thought I had this up, but I don't. So I'm going to take a minute to pull up our media interview. We do have the post-race media interview for the Xfinity Series winner, one of the closest races we've seen in a long time, Sal. Did you watch that race?
Yeah, I did watch it.
That was an amazing finish.
Yeah, it was. It was amazing, and it was sad at the same time.
I know. You had to feel for Ryan Sieg. I mean, that was probably about an inch or maybe two, but it was very, very close.
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
But,
well, we're going to – go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. We're going to talk about that in a bit.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it here in a minute. That race, the margin of victory was 0.002 thousandths of a second between Ryan Sieg and the race winner, Sam Mayer. And Sam is the driver of the number one Junior Motorsports Chevrolet. We're going to listen to part of his post-race media interview. The full length is just over 14 minutes. We're going to listen to maybe 8 or 9 minutes of that, and then Sal and I will comment on the other side. So let's hear what Sam Mayer had to say after the race.
We are now joined by the race winner for today's Andy's Frozen Custard 300, the NASCAR Xfinity Series, and the winner the NASCAR Xfinity Dash 4 Cash, and that is Sam Mayer, driver of the number one Carolina Carport Chevrolet, .002, the margin of victory. Is it sunk in yet?
That's unreal. I mean, I was like a second and a half back probably at one point. So to make up that much time in that little amount of time is certainly unreal. It shows how good our Carolina Carport Chevrolet was today. We definitely took a lot of swings at it to get it better. But obviously we led the most important lap there at the end, and we didn't dominate by any means, but we certainly worked our tails off to get there at that point. And, to win it like that, I was on the short end of that stick a couple times. So to come out on top is really cool.
Okay, we're going to open up the floor for questions. If you have a question, raise your hand. We're going to start here with Justin and go to John.
Yeah, Justin Schuler kicking the tires. Just, I guess, walk us through the last few laps, though. Like, at what point did you see Ryan's car getting bigger in your windshield, and it crossed your mind that I have a chance, I have a shot at this?
It really wasn't until about three to go that I was like, okay, I can at least have a run at it. The honestly, the big winner of the day was Kevin on top of the roof, Kevin Hamlin. He spots for the 48 on Sundays and came over to spot for me last year, starting last year and this year. And he's made leaps and bounds for myself and my driving style, and fighting the adversity throughout the race and keeping me in the game. And he told me bottom of 3 and 4 was just better. I didn't run it at all. I wasn't running it the previous 4 or 5 laps. He just said, do it. You have to do it. And I ran it the first time, and it was like, oh, it stuck really, really well. So that's kind of what put that in my head, and I started doing that with like 3 or 4 to go. And before I knew it, I was right there on the 39th bumper. So he probably is the one that won that race. I'm not good enough yet to where I would have found that on my own without him. So literally everyone had a hand in this victory. Hardy brought a brand new setup to this place. And it was way different than what we've ever dreamed of coming here with. And it definitely took some work to get it right. But once it was good, it was really, really good. So I'm super proud of everyone on top of the box, everyone in the shop building these race cars, Kevin on top of the roof. I just ended up going out there and driving the thing. I drove it as hard as I could this last couple laps and got loose a couple times, but just kept my foot in it because I'm not coming out here without a trophy. I mean, look at this thing. So it's just super cool to be here and this have this opportunity to do that. And getting a win this early in the season compared to last year and the year prior, I didn't win at all. It feels really good to get a victory, and especially at a place that I didn't even get one lap at last year. So,
impressive. We'll go next to Jonathan, then to Bob, then to Lee.
Thank you, Ben. Jonathan Field, the racing experts. Knowing the type of race you had, you weren't necessarily the best, but and the type of year you had, where I remember you called it the year from hell. How big is a win like this? You know, especially with your development and everything.
Yeah, you know, like last weekend at Martinsville, having a shot at the win. That's all you can ask for at that place. I feel like we kind of got one robbed for me there at the end, but I told myself I'm going to come back stronger than ever. I'm not going to let that get me down. I'm going to let me push it forward. And it was my best finish of the year last year. I think it was my first top five of the year. So, like, when I say it was the year from hell, I was just in shambles at that point. So to get a couple of good runs here the last 2-3 weeks and build that momentum up and get better and better each week, we're going to ride the wave the best we can. Obviously, we probably didn't have a winning race car today. I think the 7 was really good. He was hard to keep up with. But the way the caution fell, the strategy, everything. I actually came to pit road a couple laps earlier than I was supposed to because there was a miscommunication, but it ended up working in our favor, and we got a caution that we really kind of needed to get that track position and everyone squared back up. So everything kind of happened for a reason. The good Lord works in mysterious ways, that's for sure, but super proud of my guys and looking forward to keeping it rolling.
Go to Bob, then to Lee, then to Ted.
Bob Parker's Fox Sports. What do you think this win kind of does for you or means for you, considering, I mean, you could very easily be gone very, I mean, you could have wrecked right on the last lap going for a win, and then who knows where your season goes, right? So what I'm trying to look at this one from that perspective of what do you feel like it means and what does it say about how far you've come as a race car driver?
Yeah, I mean, I was less than a foot from not sitting here in the media center. So, I mean, you got to take it in perspective of you still got to get better. We have to go find more speed. Our DRM cars are getting better each and every week, but we're certainly not at the level we want or need to be at yet. And we kind of had everything fall into place. The stars aligned just today. I executed how I needed to. The team on pit road did too. Like, everyone did their jobs the way they're supposed to. We just got to be a little better. The ceiling is going to continue to get higher and higher and higher as the year progresses because the Gibbs cars aren't going to give up. The RCR cars aren't going to give up. No one's going to give up on just, oh, we'll run second today. So the ceiling's always getting higher. You're always going to have to come back and run faster. I'm going to have to do a better job in the gym. I'm going to have to do a better job being at the race shop with all my guys. I'm doing the best I can, but it's got to be more. So we're going to show up next week and the week after and the week after, and we're going to be better each and every week. And that's the bottom line.
Okay, Sal. Pretty impressive interview from Sam Mayer there. He was a little bit humble there as well.
Well, yeah, he was. It was a really good interview. You know, I mean, with the circumstances that happened, you're coming off of a win like that. You know, he's probably still in shock that he even won the race because of, you know, all the circumstances that led up to it. I mean, Ryan Sieg was, I mean, he was there, and you know, Sam Mayer and Tim Buck, you know, and, you know, when you're bumping each other going to the line, and then when you finish the way you did, you know, I'm sure they both looked over at each other to see where they finished. You know, they're wondering, well, who's going to get the win? You know, then he, you know, to get a win by a large margin is something, but to get a win by a margin like that, I think it has more of a psychological effect because in the back of your head, you're thinking, man, if I would have just let up a little bit or if I would have kept the car straight or, you know, all these things are going through your head, you know, to make up for that inch or 2 inches that he won by as compared to if he won, you know, had a big margin of victory. So, yeah, you know what, you know, we kind of, you know, last few laps, you know, we just kind of, you know, just ran our race, you know, but this one was, he was up on the wheel because he knew that Ryan Sieg was right there next to him.
Yeah, you got to feel for Ryan Sieg. I mean, he had that race pretty much in his control. And then Sam Mayer's car just took off. He mentioned that second and a half, he was behind at one point, and he was able to pick up that gap and then be there at the end. And then the thing that I was also impressed with is that I think in years past, that might have ended up in a wreck at the end, and neither one of those drivers would have won the race. But I think it showed some maturity on Sam Mayer's, and we know Ryan Sieg is a veteran of the sport, but I think it kind of indicated to me that Sam Mayer has matured a little bit. And even in his interview, giving the credit to his crew chief, Kevin Hamlin, and admitting that he would not have known some of the Kevin Hamlin was pointing out to him that helped him to gain that second and a half that he needed to be there at the end of that race and to be able to win it by 2/1000ths of a second. I heard a lot of maturity there in that interview.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, you know, now, and all he's going to do is mature, you know. Congratulations on the win, you know, and it was like you said, and like everybody talked about, you know, they put on a heck of a good race, it was a heck of a good finish, you know what, and sometimes it's not the better car that wins, sometimes it's not the better driver that wins, sometimes it's luck. Whatever it was, he was the one that crossed the line first, so, you know, they showed the photo finish, you know, after, so there was no, there was no denying it.
Absolutely. It was clear that Sam Mayer was the winner of the race. And I always think of the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat in these situations. I know it was a thrill to win that kind of a race. But again, I give kudos to Sam Mayer to really listen to his crew, to his spotter and his crew chief, and to do what he needed to do to make up that ground and just race the heck out of that car. He did a fantastic job with that race. So any other comments that you have about the finish of that race, Sal?
Yeah, you know, in the end, there was nothing that either one of them could have done different. You know what?
Nope.
They both did what they had to do, and, I mean, to get a finish like that, I mean, I'm sure Ryan Singh go back and look and think, you know, well, what could I have done different? I mean, I don't really see that there is anything. I think between the two of them, you know, there was really nothing they could have. They did everything they could, you know. And I hope, you know, we see, you know, some more finishes like that from Ryan Singh, you know, hopefully even get a win this season. I mean, he's you know, we've talked about him. You know, you know, I just, you know, I mean, it would be nice to see him, you know, pick up one of these wins.
Yeah, you certainly do. I think they said that was like the third or fourth time that he's finished second and had, you know, kind of lost to the winner. But second place is not a bad finish. It still shows a lot of progress for his team and for his organization to be able to compete. And he certainly was up there, and his team did a lot of things right. So I think it's just a matter of time before we see a win from RSS and Ryan Sieg. So I'm looking forward to that when it does happen.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure all of us are looking forward to it.
Okay, well, we're going to go ahead and move on. We've got three races to do in 30 minutes, so we're going to spend about 10 minutes on each race here. We'll be back to the Xfinity Series and Sam Mayer's victory. But before we do that, I do want to cover the race for the NASCAR Truck Series, the Speedy Cash 250, in the Craftsman Truck Series this weekend out at Texas Motor Speedway. It was Kyle Busch, the king of the road when it comes to the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series, driving the number 7 for Spire Motorsports. He led 112 on 167 laps on Friday night. The win was his second of the season. He also won at Atlanta. It was the 6th at Texas, and his 66th Truck Series win of his career. The victory also gave Busch his 11th top 10 finish in 15 races at Texas Motor Speedway. And that stat ties him with Todd Bodine for the most 6 wins in the Truck Series at Texas. So a big feat for Kyle Busch. You know, next year he's going to want to come back and beat that tie. Corey Heim, by the way, had very complimentary things to say about racing with Kyle Busch and how much he learned from him. He finished in second place, followed by the pole sitter Nick Sanchez. Then it was Christian Eckes, Zane Smith, Daniel Guy, Taylor Gray, Tanner Gray, Stefan Parsons, and Ty Majeski rounding out the top 10. There were 7 lead changes among 4 drivers, 7 cautions for 40 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 118.471 miles per hour. So do you have any comments there about the top 10 finishers, Sal?
Yeah, you know, really, Kyle Busch really, you know, dominated it. Yeah, Corey Heim's did try to make a race of it. Christian Eckes got up there for a little bit. But for the most part, you know, Corey Heim said it all. And it's, you know, when they interviewed him afterwards, you know, he said, this guy is just amazing, you know. and you know, he proved it once again. It was kind of neat to see Taylor Gray and Tanner Gray finish, you know, finish seventh and eighth, you know, behind each other, you know, being brothers, you know, and you know, getting, you know, finishing the way they did. But like I said, I mean, there was not really much you can say when you see you know, Kyle Busch, you know, back to victory lane in the trucks again. It seemed like he just kind of needed that. I think, you know, being, you know, with the skid that he's been on with RCR, you know, and to see him, you know, to get that win, I'm sure for him it was a big uplift, you know. It was a big,
a shot in the eye.
Another win. Yeah, it was another win, you know, to add to his resume. But more than that, you know, just, you know, to get that, hopefully maybe he feels, you know, with this win, it'll get whatever bad mojo he has, whatever gremlin, you know, he might have killed it, you know, with this. And you know, now see how he, you know, how he responds, you know, back to the Cup Series, you know, which is where he's making his living at.
Absolutely. some great finishes up there. Daniel Dye up in the top six. Stefan Parsons having a good run. Lawless Allen finished in 11th place, so that was a good run for him. The margin of victory was 0.112 seconds. There were 17 cars on the lead lap at the end of the race. Some other cars going down to 28 cars finished the race. The difference there are the drivers that finished a lap or more down. And then there were a handful of drivers that had accidents that took them out early, including Tyler Ankrum, Memphis Villarreal, and Thad Moffitt, all out on lap one due to an accident. So that was a very early exit for those three drivers. Lane Riggs, the rookie, was out on lap 135. He had an accident. On lap 145, it was Chris Wright out of the race due to an accident. And then the last one was Grant Infinger, who was involved in an accident that took him out of the race on lap 151. So that number seven, Kyle Busch, pretty much dominated the whole night. He won the first two stages as well as the last stage of the race. So, it cannot be understated how much these drivers learn from Kyle Busch when he is in a race. And when they can race side by side with him and back and forth with him, Corey Heim kind of confirmed, and I think the others would agree, these drivers learn a lot from Kyle Busch when they can race with him in a race like that.
Okay, there's a fact, you know, that he did it, you know, out of, you know, not in one of his own trucks, you know, it wasn't a Kyle Busch Motorsports truck, it wasn't a Toyota, it was a Chevy, you know, with you know, it was with Spire Motorsports, you know. So Spire really liked the attention, you know, and the win, you know, that Kyle gave him,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, you know, so, which is actually the team. Actually, it's kind of, when you think about it, I just remember now, that's Kyle's old team, Spire Motorsports, was the boss.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he got to jump in basically one of his old trucks, but. You know, not racing for Toyota anymore. You know, now he's racing for Chevrolet. But you know,
right.
To get out there, you know, get the win, and, you know, dominate the way he did, and his post-race interview was a lot more mellow than what it's been. You know, he wasn't. You know, he just, you know, kind of like, hey, you know, I got the win. You know, and he, you know, he gave his interview, and you know, it's really really good, solid win for Kyle and for Spire Motorsports.
Yes, it was. Let's go ahead and cover the points report after the SpeedyCash.com 250.
Okay, the points report, the points. then and after this race is we're still going to stick with Christian Eckes leading the points. I think he took over the. No, he's still leading. That's right, because Corey Heim would have taken the lead if it had been. Yeah, that's right. So Christian Eckes still leading the points. Corey Heim is in second. Christian Eckes has the 2 wins. Corey Heim has the 1 win, so they're locked in. Tymiejewski still in third. Nick Sanchez has his win in fourth. Taylor Gray in fifth in points. Tyler Ingram is sixth in points. Roger Caruth, seventh. Matt Crafton, eighth. Tyler Gray, ninth. And Grant Enfinger is sitting 10th in points. So, right behind him, 5 points out, and 6 points out is Daniel Dyer and Ben Rhodes.
Yep. It's going to be interesting. Christian's got the most playoff points there. He's got the 3-stage wins, which is the most in the series, and the 2 race wins, which is the most in the series. So he's off to a really good start there. 2 drivers have 6 playoff points, and that would be Corey Heim and Nick Sanchez. They have exact stats when it comes to race wins and stage wins with 1 apiece. So going to be interesting. I can't wait to see how this continues to play out. Christian Eckes looked very strong in that race, as well as Corey Heim. So we'll have to see how this continues to play out as the season continues this year.
Yeah, and actually Chris Eckes has been looking good all season long, so let's see how long he can keep it up for, because we all know that, you know, they race in kind of like spurts. You know, they'll have, 2, 3, 4, 5 good runs, and then they have, then they're off weeks. So hopefully his off weeks aren't bad enough, to where it'll knock them out, too low. The ones that usually get hurt by the off weeks are the guys sitting, usually 8th, 9th, and 10th in points, way at the bottom,
Yep.
If they catch a win, then they lock themselves in. But Bronson right now is sitting really good. He's 70 points ahead, of the cutoff line. So Roger's been having some good runs. You get a lot of airtime, a lot of drivers talking about him, the announcers and the commentators also, talking about the season that Roger Caruth is having. So we'll see how he finishes out in the Rick Hendrick Motorsports sponsored truck.
Yeah, and a big congratulations to Hilgerman, McAnally Hilgerman Racing too. They are really having a stellar year this year with Christian Eckes.
Oh yeah, they are. They're having Christian has really been stepping up this game this year.
Yes, indeed. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and move on now to that Xfinity Series race. Again, one of the closest races we've seen. Sam Mayer wins that Xfinity Series race over Ryan Sieg in a race that was decided by less than the length of a Texas hot chili pepper. The junior motorsports driver Sam Mayer pulled off a last-lap pass of the veteran Ryan Sieg to claim his first victory of the season in the Andy Skrozin Custard 300 at Texas Motor Speedway. By the slimmest of margins, Sam Mayer won that race by .002 second margin of victory in the second closest finish in series history. This is Sieg matched the best finish of his career with his second-place finish and his first top 5 finish since late in the 2022 season that was at Talladega. Justin Allgaier led a race-high 117 laps and won both stages, but dropped to third in the finishing order. The number 16 of A.J. Allmendinger and Cole Custer round out the top 5. Then it was Austin Hill in sixth, Ryan Truex back in the number 20 for Joe Gibbs Racing. Sammy Smith and Jesse Love, along with Anthony Alfredo, rounding out the top 10. There were 16 lead changes among 10 drivers, 7 cautions for 35 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was a little faster at 125.977 miles per hour. Your thoughts about the top 10 finishers beyond those top two drivers?
Yeah, it was another good run for Jesse Love. He finished ninth. You know, he had an up and down day. Cole looked like he might have, you know, not really had a chance to win, but Cole Custer was strong all day. You know, then you go down to Austin Hill, you know, who's continuing, you know, his top 10 finishes, you know, in the season picked up, you know, that sixth place finish. You know, there was a lot of, you can just go into all the issues that the drivers still having with each other, you know, not being happy with the way they're racing each other. But, you know, this is a fast track, and I'll tell you, it was not a really good show with the Xfinity cars. AJ Allmendinger finished fourth, and then they had Ryan Truex who finished that seventh place finish.
Yeah, Corey Heim did double duty. He came in with that 17th place finish. And then the other one, Taylor Gray, also in the truck race, had an 11th place finish. So good finishes for those guys that were doing double duty between the trucks and the Xfinity Series race. Most 36 cars running at the end of this race. Some only 25 finished all 200 laps. And only a couple of incidents. Chad Fincham was out on lap 127 for a suspension issue. And then on lap 191, Kyle Weatherman was out of the race because of an accident, I think, with Dawson Cram. But they put on a good show in the Xfinity Series to have so many cars still running at the end of that race.
Yeah, it was a really good race, you know, and he kind of felt bad for, you know, for Ryder Herbst, who just never,
yeah,
you know, he got hit. I think Ryder got hit, and then, you know, but still came back to only finish a lap down. You know, he just didn't have the car, you know, to end up coming back, you know, like they said, once you went down, it was hard to make up any ground after that.
Yeah, I hear you. Having that clean air makes a lot of difference at Texas, and this was no exception in this race. And I think that there were some bumps over in turn three that were giving drivers a challenge, but this turned out to be a pretty good race. Josh Williams with a top 12 finish as well. I wanted to point that out. And then Ryan Sieg's brother was in this race too, Kyle Sieg. He finished in 14th place.
Yeah, and then of course the highest finishing rookie once again was Jesse Love.
Yep, he's just having a fantastic season for sure. Do you want to go ahead and cover the points report next?
Yeah, then on the points report. We still got Chandler Smith leading the points with 2 wins. Second is Cole Custer, who's still looking for his first win. Third is Austin Hill with his 2 wins. And then we go to Justin Allgaier, Jesse Love sitting in fifth. Ryder Herbst sitting in sixth. And then from there, then we go down to A.J. Allmendinger in seventh. Sammy Smith in eighth. Parker Kligerman in ninth. Sheldon Creed in 10th, and Ryan Sieg 11th, and Brandon Jones is sitting on the bubble. But
yep,
then, of
he's
course,
above the cut line.
Yeah. And then now Sam Mayer with his one win will put him, you know, up above the, you know, it'll put him in the mix up there. But he's sitting 14th in points. I'm sure before the end of, you know, a few more weeks, he'll get enough points, you know, to where he'll be up in the top, you know, in the top 12, you know, which is, you know, where the cutoff is.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sam Mayer right now is below that cut line, but his win actually pushes him above the cut line, which displaces Brandon Jones. The highest, Chandler Smith with the two wins and three stage wins, and then Austin Hill's not far behind him as far as playoff points with the two wins, but he has only one stage win that give him 11 stage off playoff points. So, again, really cool to see these drivers competing this year. And Chandler Smith is having a really good season.
Yeah, he is. He's having a good season, just like, you know, just like you said, you know, just like Jesse Love, who's sitting in the fifth, is the highest rookie right now. You know, then from there, then you go down to Shane Van Gisbergen, and he's sitting 15th in points, you know, and, you know, struggling on the ovals, which we expected, you know, I'm sure, you know, he'll learn. Who knows? He might. I mean, he's not too far out from, he's only 20 points out from.
Yeah, I think it's still impressive that he is 15th in the points. I think that's for his first year racing. Yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts there, Sal?
No, that's it with the Xfinity. I mean.
Okay, then we'll move over to the NASCAR Cup Series, the Auto Trader Echo Park Automotive 400. They raced on Sunday, and Chase Elliott broke his winless streak in a double overtime. He was on a 42-race winless streak and snapped that this weekend by holding off the field in a thrilling, wildly popular double overtime victory at Texas Motor Speedway. Now, his last win dates back to the 2022 season. By no means was it an easy win for Chase Elliott, the sport's most popular driver, but that's part of what made it so special. He's 28 years old from Georgia, and I'm sure they were ringing the bell at the Dawsonville Pool Hall on Sunday night. The driver of the number 9 Hendrick Motorsports Chevrolet prevailed in three late restarts, including two in overtime, to claim his first Cup Series win at the Texas High Banks and his first trophy since his playoff victory at Talladega Super Speedway in October of 22. It was his first race of the year, his first to Texas, and the 19th career win. They showed William Byron in second, followed by Brad Keselowski, but NASCAR did review that and determined that Brad Keselowski actually finished in second place, and William Byron was credited with a third-place finish. Tyler Reddick in fourth, then it was Daniel Suarez, followed by Chase Briscoe, Austin Dillon finally having a decent run, Bubba Wallace, Kyle Busch, and Carson Hocevar cracks into the top 10. The race ended under caution during the second overtime attempt. On the final restart, Elliott held the lead with the number one Ross Chastain in second. Chastain was running second on the final lap when Byron got into his rear and spun him around, causing another yellow flag. Chastain ended up finishing 32nd. It depends on your point of view on what happened in that incident. Some people think that Chastain came up the track and didn't clear the wall as well as he could have, and that's what caused the wreck. Others see it the way it was listed here. The pole winner, Kyle Larson, finished 20th after he lost a wheel during the race. Stage one was won by Kyle Larson. Stage two was won by Ross Chastain. There were 23 lead changes among 13 drivers and 16 cautions for 72 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race, this was a little bit slower at 116.492 miles per hour. Your thoughts about our top 10 finishers, Sal?
Yeah, I was kind of pulling for Chase on this win. You know, it's funny because during the interview when they told Brad after the race, yeah, you know, finished third, he goes, I think I finished second. He goes, I'll wait for NASCAR to make that decision.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, I'm glad they credited him with the second place, you know, he deserved. But I was pulling for Brad, and he just could never, after that last restart, he just couldn't fire off enough to get up, you know, to catch Chase, which really nobody could. You know, Chase was in a race all his own up there. Chase Briscoe had a good run. Daniel Suarez, another one, you know, a good run. You know, and Kyle Busch and Austin Dillon, you know, both finished eighth and ninth. You know, was a finish that I'm sure Austin Dillon really, really, really wanted and really, really needed. But, you know, why don't we talk a little bit about that last week, you know, about the, you know, teammate, you know, and how he could be pulling, you know, Kyle down with them, you know. But William Byron continues his strong season. I know before the race they talked to Rudy Fugle about, you know, the season that William Byron's having this year, you know, but another top five finish, Tyler Reddick, another one, you know, top five finish, Daniel Suarez, top five, you know, then you go down, up and down the list, you know, Chris Bell, you know, finishing 17th, you know, Martin Truex, 14th, and Ty Gibbs, I still think we're going to see a win out of Ty Gibbs this year, finished 13th,
yep.
So I still think we're going to see, before the end of the season, we're going to see a win from him.
Yeah, a lot of those finishes not really indicative of how well a lot of those drivers ran, but they put on a really good show in the Cup Series as well. 33 drivers finished the race. Some, 32, I guess. Some of them finished a lap or more down. Not very many, though. Most of them did finish all 76 laps. 31 drivers finished all 276 laps. There was a steering issue for Austin Hill, which is a shame. He was out on lap 98 in a race that was supposed to give him some seat time to kind of adapt to the next-gen car. Alex Bowman had an accident that took him out of the race on lap 100. And Josh Berry also had an accident, taking him out on lap 136. Michael McDowell hit the wall. That took him out of the race at lap 143. He said it just got loose over there in that turn four, where they had those bumps. They just really had a lot of trouble with that corner. John Hunter Nemechek had an accident that took him out on lap 226. And so everybody else finished let's see, Ross Chastain only finished a lap down, and Ryan Blaney finished 8 laps down. Everybody else finished all 276 laps. This race ended under caution. The number 5 we mentioned, it finished stage 1 as the lead, and it was Ross Chastain who won stage 2. Any other thoughts about the race there?
No, that was really about it. It was a good race. It was, it was good to see, Chase Elliott, you know, finally get that monkey off his shoulder, you know, and grab that, you know, the win.
Yeah.
I mean, we knew it was just a matter of time, you know, before Chase was going to get, you know, was going to break that streak.
Yep.
To see the Fords, you know, finally, grab a good finish, you know. like Brad said, they're still lacking speed. You know, if he would have more speed, he would have caught him. But like Brad said, he just didn't, you know, they're working on it. But, you know, it's good to see, you know, him get that, you know, I was really glad to see him get that finish. And, you know, I don't know who was the other, the highest finishing rookie was Carson Hocevar finished 10th.
Mm-hmm. Yep, good race for both of those guys. Let's go ahead and cover the points report.
Okay, then on the points side, we have driver points. We have Kyle Larson still leading the points with his one win. Martin Truex Jr. sitting in second with no wins. Danny Hamlin in third with two wins. Chase Elliott sitting in fourth, finally got the win, so he locked himself in. William Byron sitting in fifth with the three wins. Ryan Blaney seventh, and Tyler Reddick right off the top eight. And then from there, then we go to Bubba Wallace in ninth, Christopher Bell in 10th, Ross Chastain 11th, Chase Briscoe 12th, Chris Buescher in 13th, 14th, Joey Logano 15th, and Kyle Busch right there right there on the bubble with Brad Keselowski only 1 point behind him now at 216 and 217. Kyle Busch made a big digging to get into that top 16. There's Brad right there at his heels. So
we've got a similar situation here in the Cup Series as with the Xfinity Series. Daniel Suarez has a win, so he actually displaces Kyle Busch to below the cut line.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about Daniel's win. I think before the end of the season, we're gonna see a win from Kyle.
Yeah, I think so too. It would be hard to believe Kyle Busch not winning a race during any season. That's for sure. Kyle Larson has the 10 playoff points with his win and 5 stage wins. He's got the most stage wins. Denny Hamlin has the 12 points with 2 wins and 2 stage wins. At 15 playoff points, though, is William Byron with his 3 victories. He has no stage wins yet, but those 3 victories give him the most playoff points of any of the drivers. So kudos for that.
Oh, yeah. And then the highest finish, actually the highest rookie in the point standing is Carson Hocevar, who is sitting 22nd in points.
Yep, that's right. Carson Hocevar, he's leading the points. And that was an impressive top 10 for Carson Hocevar as well. So you're going to be out at Kevin Harvick's Kern Raceway this weekend. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited to get back out to racing again. It looks like it's going to be a nice day for racing. So, you know, I'll make the 2-hour drive over the hill, make the 2-hour drive at night back home after the race. I just wish they could have taken some of the dog and pony show out of the middle and so we could finish earlier. Hopefully we'll finish early. I just really like to get out of there just at once, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and not get out of there at 11, 12 o'clock. I think it's a long drive home.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But enjoy the race out there.
Oh, yeah. But because of TV, because of the ARCA Menards, because of their TV deal, they have to start at a certain time. So.
Right. Yeah,
but find something
to fill in. Yep, I hear you. Well, be safe, Sal, as you go out to the racetrack. Wear your hat so you don't get sunburned, and we'll look forward to talking to you next Monday night.
All right.
Okay, thanks,
Sal. All right,
Sal.
Good night, everyone. Have a good weekend. Have a good time, and we'll talk to you next weekend.
All righty. All right. We're at the bottom of the hour, and in this case, that means it's time for a Hot Topic Sound-Off conversation with our Fan for Racing crew, and we have a couple of people here for that. We'll start with Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. Happy to be on here tonight. I know we had a big weekend there at Texas, and I believe Tommy, if I saw correctly on the board there, Tommy's going to be with us tonight, so I look forward to that.
Yes, Tommy is here as well. So welcome to the show, Tommy. We're happy to have you back.
Hey, how are y'all? Thanks for having me back. It's been a while.
Yes, it has been, and we're like I say, we're happy to have you back. Tommy, why don't you kick us off with the first hot topic here tonight?
All right, let's go with Chase Elliott winning Texas, and I believe there's one for him having the fastest pit stop at Texas as well.
Yes, okay. So, Jay, you want to talk about that?
Well, there are a lot of things, and I just finished up actually watching the race. I've been tied up all weekend, so I was trying to get the tail end of the race in here off of my DVR before I came on the show. But there was so much going on there. Great to see that Chase Elliott had that fastest pit stop. But track position and restarts became the key. Obviously, they had, three restarts there at the end in overtime. So that was the big thing. We still don't see the outright speed from the number 9 team that we've seen with William Byron in his wins. But we've also seen that having that outright speed in the fastest car throughout an entire race doesn't necessarily equate to winning. And take Kyle Larson, for example, as well. You end up in the back, things happen. So just the overall team endurance, putting the whole race together, no matter what you got to overcome, pitch strategy you got to run, tire management, fuel management. I think they said that Chase had enough left for one more green-white checker to restart, so that was becoming a factor. So all of that was packed into one race, and especially there the finish of that race. So I found that really exciting when it came to that. Obviously, it's good for the sport. Whether you're a fan of him or not, Chase Elliott is NASCAR's most popular driver. Drivers like that bring attention when they get the win, and I was happy to see that. Happy for the sport, happy for Chase Elliott. Happy that we see somebody different in victory lane. I like that. So could have gone a lot of different ways there at the end, but certainly happy for Chase Elliott and for the sport because it does obviously help the sport.
Yes, it really does. And they credited the fastest pit stop that they had there to having just the one lug nut that it was the fastest in the next gen car era, and with the one lug nut at 8.49 seconds, the four tire pit stop at Texas Motor Speedway. The link that I posted to that gives you a video of that pit stop, and it looked flawless. So a lot to be said for the pit crew, and I'm sure that helped give Chase Elliott some track position as a result of that really fast pit stop as well. So I thought it was worthy of pointing out and for us to talk about it tonight. But I agree with you. So great to see Chase Elliott get that first victory after 42 winless races, the last one dating back to Talladega in October of 2022. Chase Elliott has to feel real good about getting that victory. And one of my favorite things that drivers do is the Polish victory lap. I was happy to see Chase Elliott do that to honor all of his legion of fans that come every racetrack to watch him race. I thought it was fantastic to see him out there doing the Polish victory lap, waving to everybody and giving them a chance to celebrate with him in getting that victory. So really happy for Chase Elliott. And I know William Byron's been really good this year as well. But it really shows that these Hendrick Motorsports teams have been working really, really hard. The flip side of that, of course, is the wheel that came off for Kyle Larson. That was a fluky thing that happened because even the announcers talked about how it was latent. He'd been racing for a while. It wasn't like he just came off pit road and the wheel came off. He'd been racing for a while. So that tells me it was probably a parts failure that caused that wheel to come off. But they did hold him on victory on pit road and everything. But Kyle Larson was looking very strong in the early part of that race. So Hendrick Motorsports has really done a fantastic job with their organization. And this whole season seems to be between Hendrick Motorsports and Joe Gibbs Racing with the work that they've done in the off season to come back this season and do as well as both of those organizations are doing. So, Tommy, I'm anxious to hear what your thoughts are.
It was good to see Chase Elliott back in victory lane for sure. He snapped a 42 race streak or something like that. It had been a while. Like, you know, I would say over the last 2 years, William Byron and Kyle Larson have kind of taken the reins at Hendrick and have been the two strongest cars over Chase and Alex. But, you know, Chase has been running pretty good this season, so I think it was just a matter of time before we saw him get back in victory lane, just like I also think it'll be a matter of time before we see Brad Keselowski back in victory lane, too. But I actually missed the Xfinity race and the truck race, and I did see the photo finish on Twitter of the Xfinity race. I saw stage one of the race yesterday. I missed most of stage two. I came in at stage two or came back to stage two and saw the wreck fest, and then they finished that stage and started stage three, and I saw, you know, the green flag stretch and then more wrecks. And then finally we saw Chase win in double overtime. So I did catch some of Texas. Can't say that I'm still a fan of the track, but I will say that all the wrecks did kind of, you know, they at least kept it intriguing a little bit with all the restarts. And the one thing that kind of bothered me was that if you got close enough to pass, it kind of looked like you were going to spin out, like when Denny Hamlin had that issue, Bubba Wallace. I just, as you guys know, not a fan of Texas. But I will say that that was not the worst Texas race I've ever seen. So I'm kind of wishing I would have caught the Xfinity race because of the double or the photo finish. But, you know, I was kind of pulling for Ryan Sieg to win because he hasn't won yet. He's been close a bunch of times, so it would have been cool to have seen him win. But, yeah, it's good to see Chase back in victory lane. I mean, he is NASCAR's biggest star. He's won the most popular driver ever since Junior retired, so big deal for him to win. Also, that's got to be the first time I've seen Hooters win. I mean, I know Alan Kulicki sponsored it, and so did Brett Bodine, but I don't think I've ever seen the car go in victory lane. So kind of cool to see Hooters get a win again. He did the Polish victory lap. I was kind of hoping he was going to burn it down because it's been 42 races, but I'll take the Polish victory lap.
Okay. Jay, your follow-up?
Well, I'll set aside the races, all the races there in Texas, and maybe do that as the next hot topic, because that's why I said I was glad to have Tommy on tonight when it comes to that. But just sticking with Chase Elliott and tying in Hendrick Motorsports, and Sharon, you touched on this, Joe Gibbs Racing as well. We look, talking about this being the third year of the next gen or Generation 7 car. When it first came out, it was designed to bring parity, and it did. But eventually the cream is going to rise to the top, and we're seeing that between these two organizations now, Hendrick Motorsports and Joe Gibbs Racing. It's kind of been William Byron at the lead of it, against Denny Hamlin. You obviously also have Kyle Larson there for Hendrick Motorsports, as well as then Christopher Bell. And Martin Truex and Ty Gibbs on the JGR side. And Chase Elliott and Alex Bowman been putting together good, solid runs. Chase now being in with the victors list. Really could come down to those being the final eight or, you know, final four, whether one organization can do all four in the final four. I know that's getting way down the road, but, I mean, that's what it's looked like so far this year. We did have a couple others mixing it up. Brad Keselowski, Ross Chastain up until the end, up in there mixing it up. So I don't think that they completely taken the parity away, but they're going to have to work hard because obviously those two organizations have, and it's being rewarded with these victories. So had Kyle Larson not had the issues he had, he would obviously, I think, been in there mixing it up as well, as was Denny Hamlin there with Chase Elliott in those final laps. So be interesting to see the rest of the year here. I know Fords are still kind of lagging just a little bit. Just need that final, always need that final piece to close out a race. I know Brad Keselowski, I saw his interview, and they just don't quite have that speed when it comes to that, and he said he was kicking his own butt because he's responsible for that now as one of the owners. But I thought that was kind of funny. He's like, I'm going to take it up with management. Oh, wait, that's me.
Yeah, that was kind of funny. I agree with a lot of what both of you guys have said here. I do think that even though we have two organizations that seem to be at the top, to kind of start off this season, if I remember, at the very beginning of the season, it was the Chevrolets. Was it the Chevrolets doing really well at the beginning? And then all of a sudden it seemed like, well, I guess Hendrick is Chevrolet, isn't it? Okay, forget that. I don't know what I was thinking.
No, Sharon, it was Chevrolet that had won, I believe, the first nine races across all three of the series, the Truck Series, Xfinity, and Cup, that Chevrolet had won all of them until Toyota broke in with Christopher Bell, I think, if that's what you're thinking.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. And actually, I think what we're going to see, a lot of times when something like that happens, eventually the other teams start to catch up. And Brad Keselowski kind of alluded to that they are working on it. And they are kind of getting better. It's obvious that they're getting better. And I've got this as a hot topic later, too, but and we'll talk about that. They originally had William Byron finishing in second place. And when NASCAR reviewed the video and Brad Keselowski said it when he got out of his car, I'm not going to accept third just yet. I want to wait for the video review. And when NASCAR reviewed it, they did see that Brad Keselowski was indeed second, and so they credited William Byron then with the third-place finish. So Fords are making some progress, and we have seen glimpses of the Ford cars being there. Ross Chastain has had some good runs. And that incident that happened between him and William Byron, I think it depends on which is your favorite driver there. Some people felt that Ross Chastain didn't really blend off of the well very well, and that's when he bounced off the wall and hit William Byron. Other people seem to think that William Byron hit Ross Chastain. So I think I don't think anybody intentionally hit anybody. I think it was one of those racing incidents. But it did affect the race for especially Ross Chastain. He ended up, I think, a lap down. But these races, these drivers are really very, very competitive on the track. And I think that's, we did see a lot of lead changes. We saw a lot of racing in that race. In fact, I wanted to go back here. There were 23 lead changes among 13 different drivers So that tells me that's a lot of lead changes, and amongst 13 different drivers. So I saw a lot of different race strategies at play in this race. And I agree with Tommy. Sometimes the racing is not what fans are looking for at Texas Motor Speedway. But there was a lot going on in this race, I thought. And it certainly wasn't a bad race at Texas Motor Speedway this weekend. I thought we saw some good racing action on the track, and some different names up in the top 10. Austin Dillon and Kyle Busch, after we talked about them last week and expressed some concern about what was happening at RCR, we saw those drivers have good finishes in the top 10. And Carson Hocevar, the highest finishing rookie finishing out, was a top 10 finish as well. So some different names up in that top group, including Chase Briscoe from Stewart Haas Racing, also up in the top 10 there. So I do think over time we're going to see the Fords and some other Chevrolet drivers finishing, getting some good finishes as they learn and develop the speed in their cars. So, Tommy, what's your final word on this topic?
Oh, I was talking about Chase finally got a win. Brad Kay, he finished third, or can't remember where they scored him. But either way, he's getting close to probably winning a race this year. And then the other one I was going to add is Ty Gibbs. It's only a matter of time before he's in victory lane, in my opinion. Yeah, Austin Dillon and Kyle Busch should get top 10s. RCR has not been very good this year, which when I say that, I mean Kyle Busch. Nothing against Austin Dillon, but to me it's a miracle even if he runs in the top 20, but that's just me. You know, still don't really like Texas. Like I said, it wasn't a bad race, but it's still Texas. I mean, when I think back on this race, I'm going to think about how Denny Hamlin tried to pass for the lead and spun out. Bubba tried to pass for the lead and spun out. I mean, it just shouldn't be that way. They should be able to pass. I feel like at Martinsville a few weeks ago, the only car that could pass was William Byron, and nobody else could. You know, it's kind of like how it is. Every time they get a new car, it takes it a while for things to get to where they need to be. And I still feel like they're working on, they still need to work on a way for these cars to be able to pass better. Cause short tracks and like Texas, to me, them not being able to pass is just kind of ridiculous. But Talladega's this weekend. Can't wait. I saw somebody, I think it was Barstool Sports maybe, said that Talladega was the masters of NASCAR. I think I might have to agree with that. Daytona and Talladega are, I mean, to me they're the best races, but that's because I like super speedways. But to me they're always the most watched NASCAR races too. I don't know what it is about them, but they draw the crowd, and it's coming up this weekend, and I can't wait to see it.
Okay, me too, Tommy. Okay, what is our next hot topic, Jay?
Well, let's go a little further into Texas across the board from the Truck Series Xfinity as well as the Cup. I know this year they talked about that they did not put the resin down to try and help grip in that top groove. We saw in practice the bumps in turns 3 and 4, which is they call the treacherous turn, took out Kyle Busch and Jim Johnson in practice. Tommy's mentioned that high lane trying to make the pass for the lead, at least on the Cup side. But when you look at the Xfinity, we saw some great racing. Second closest race in Xfinity Series history, I believe, the photo finish they had there. And you mentioned it, absolute heartbreaker for Ryan Sieg, without a doubt. But I also thought that the trucks put on a good race. That are we getting to the point where Texas as a track is developing into a good track?
Okay, that's an interesting question. I'm to hear what you have to say about that, Tommy.
I don't think Texas is developing into a good track. I actually thought this during the race while it was going on yesterday. The Richmond race, when I was watching that and saw the grandstand and it was Easter weekend, I thought maybe they should race on Easter. Maybe they should take Easter off. Well, if they take Easter off, instead of maybe losing the Richmond date, why not just skip and not go to Texas at all? I mean, you've already got COTA in Texas. So that's my argument with Texas is you're already racing at COTA, which I think is a good track. I think it's only going to get better if they keep continuing to go there. Plus, I think Austin, like, you know, they always do the F1 in Austin or the IndyCar. I don't know which one it is, but they always go to Austin. And I feel like Austin likes COTA and people go to it. I do have to say that the crowd did look pretty good for Texas yesterday. It was surprising because I feel like in the past couple of years there was a lot of empty seats when you're watching on TV, but there was a crowd there. Yeah, the Xfinity race had the photo finish. I don't know how the rest of the race went because I only saw that. I don't know how the truck race went because I didn't see that. But I did see where Tyler Ankrum and somebody, Richard Petty's grandson, wrecked on like the second lap, which, I mean, the truck series to me, it's either a really good race or it's a lot of wrecks. Most of the time it's a lot of wrecks, but some of them are still entertaining to watch. Like I said, you're already going to COTA. There's other tracks on the schedule that I think you need to go to. I just wouldn't go to Texas. I mean, drivers complained about it the last couple of years. Fans complained about it. I know that Mr. Smith owns it, so it's probably not going anywhere. This race was good. I definitely don't think it deserves a playoff race. If you're going to go there, it definitely is a one-track race a year. But, you know, with NASCAR over the past couple years tweaking the schedule, looking into the schedule and making changes, I think Texas is one they should experiment with. But that's just me.
Yeah, I hear you. And I know a lot of people would agree with you. I'm a little more mixed on it. I thought the races that we saw this week were pretty good. The margin of victory for the truck race was like 0.112 seconds. So that was 112 thousandths of a second difference there between first and second place. I thought that they put on a good show. I know at the beginning of the season, the Truck Series race, it was a wreck fest. It was horrible. I didn't enjoy watching it at all. But it seems like they settled down a little bit, and these guys are out there actually racing instead of wrecking each other. And I think since they kind of settled in a little bit, I think that we have seen some better racing for them. Specific to Texas Motor Speedway, I don't have any stats on how many passes there were at that track, but I do know it's a hard track. Now, they were racing at night as opposed to during the daytime. I know it's probably slicker during the day when they've got the heat, and this was one of the warmer races that they raced at with the Cup Series. So that track was really slick. A lot of the drivers and the commentators were talking about the bumps over that Jay referenced over between 3 and 4, where a lot of drivers spun out. And that happened during practice as well, where drivers had to go to a backup car or had to make repairs on the car after sliding over in that turn. but I think one thing that a lot of people don't take into consideration, and it's not complete. It's probably somewhere in between. But I do think that because of the parity of the car, it does make it a little bit harder for these guys to pass each other because they're on pretty equal footing. I don't know that that is the complete answer at Texas Motor Speedway. I think that that track, they talked about the differences between the turns over in one and two are flatter turns, where the turns over in three and four are more banked turns. So it's hard to set up the car for that track for that reason. So, and that's going to be a challenge. I will say one of the things, and I saw this post on Twitter, Goodyear came out with a post before the race, and I don't know if they do that every race, but I did see it before this race, where they talked about the air pressure in the tires, that, you know, teams that sometimes look for an advantage will play around with the air pressure in those tires, and that sometimes causes them to get the flat tires. I don't think we saw an extraordinary number of flat tires at Texas Motor Speedway, but there were some. I do think that teams do play around with that air pressure, and they get bit with the flat tires when they do that. But it's a hard track to set up. But I guess the way I look at it is that this is the premier series of NASCAR, and it's not supposed to be an easy series for these drivers to race in. It's supposed to be difficult. And so I'll never forget asking Eric Jones about this when he won a race at Chicagoland Speedway. And all the drivers that day were complaining about, again, bumps over in turn three. And when I asked Eric Jones about it, his commentary was, it's my job to figure out how to get around those bumps and what's the best way for me to manage that. And I think that's true. Even though there's bumps over there, that's kind of what the driver and the crew chief, and that's what their job is. Their job is to figure that out and figure out how they can get around that corner better. I'm not going to say that there's not more improvements that can be made by NASCAR. There's always improvements that can be made by NASCAR. NASCAR made the decision not to use the resin. I think the resin might have helped a little bit, maybe in this situation. But what I don't know is maybe the drivers asked them not to use the resin this time. You know, it's hard to say, but I do think that it's not supposed to be easy. I think that these drivers are supposed to be the best in the business, and that's their job to figure that out. So, but it's a team effort between the drivers, NASCAR, Goodyear. They're all working together to try to make the racing better. But I think Texas is one of those tracks that is difficult because it's flat over in turns one and two, and with the higher banks over in three and four, it makes it harder. So, Jay, I'm curious to hear what you have to say.
Well, Sharon, there's not a whole lot of times where I don't have a whole lot to say, and it seems like a lot of times it's because I got to follow you, and you've said it. You know, I talked about last week with the driver saying it's hard to pass. When you get to the top five and top ten and back out for these wins, it shouldn't be easy to pass. The track shouldn't be an easy track. I don't think it's a dangerous track, but you mentioned it, and I was there with you when you got that interview from Eric Jones, and I remember that his statement that it's now my job to manage the bumps, manage the corner, manage my line to not have those issues. So I think that does come into play. And I know where Tommy's coming from with some of the races we have seen in Texas, although I wouldn't call them the worst thing I've ever seen. They certainly weren't the most exciting. I thought there was some good to maybe even great racing this past weekend across all three series. Sharon, you mentioned it. Can things still be improved? Always. And that does take the complete, not just the teams, but there are some things that Goodyear can look at. There are some things that NASCAR can look at. So I think that one of the things I know, Tommy mentioned the grandstand. Texas appears to be very happy with this spring date, although they're not in the playoffs. They're not going up against the NFL, which obviously Texas is a big football state when it comes to the Cowboys and the Longhorns when it comes to college. So that's one thing. The temperature difference and then the resin. I said they didn't put resin down this year, but they said that what was on the track did still seem to come up a little bit. And I don't know if that's what was causing that slickness in that second to higher lane when these guys were trying to make the pass. I think that's one of those as they still develop with this car. I know it's the third year, but this race at Texas now being in the spring, the resin, whatever, that they can find improvements in that area, whether they apply resin again or not, how they work that, maybe use the tire dragon again if they would need to. But something, because there did seem to be that issue with going on the outside, not being able to hold it out there, so you either got to get back in line and try and dive underneath or lose your car. And it's not like it was, again, you got skilled drivers. You mentioned Denny Hamlin, Bubba Wallace. I think there were four of them, they said, that were second place going for the lead and lost it. And I'm trying to think who the other one was, the other two were. Denny Hamlin, Bubba Wallace, Kyle Larson, was that one? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, Chastain's was a little separate, but yeah. But that's part of it. You know, I mean, there again, it's that's part of it. You know, maybe move up to the third lane and run up along the wall if you can, or a little bit higher up there and come off and cut underneath. So there again, manage your line where your car is working and it does work. But I think that's part of it. And I like to see that they have to challenge themselves, the machine, the track, all of it together, like you said, Eric Jones reference. So I'm not in favor of taking it away yet. They've already gone down to one date, and I got no problem with that. We'll see how this spring date comes into play of give it a year or two yet to see how this spring date works in. But I think it's still worthy to have on the schedule. Especially when, you know, I'm on that, I know the logistics of it isn't ever probably going to happen, but I would like to see him run on 36 different tracks and not double up on as many as they do. But, you know, there again, that's dream world, if you will. I don't even know if there's 36 different ones out there to go to, but.
Okay, Tommy, your follow-up?
McDowell was the other one that I think was going for the lead that wrecked.
Yep,
you're correct.
But, you know, the passing is just not the issue at Texas either, though. I mean, Martinsville had it. Richmond had it. And, you know, last year, basically all the short tracks, North Wilkesboro, Martinsville, Bristol, you know, they'll work on it. They'll get it figured out. I hope it's sooner rather than later. I think Junior is even the one that tweeted it and said, you know, short tracks will make a comeback once they get this car figured out. And, you know, like I said earlier this year on the podcast, NASCAR just needs to do what Junior says, and it'll work out. But for Texas, like I said, Mr. Smith owns it, so I don't think it's going anywhere. This certainly was not the worst Texas race. I'm still not that big of a fan of it, even though it had, I would say, good races this weekend or decent races this weekend. But that's just me. I just don't see a need in going to Texas when you have COTA there, and I think COTA's better anyway. But Jay brought up a good point with Texas being in the spring, it doesn't compete with football. I mean, yeah, football and March Madness just ended too. So NASCAR right now at the moment is the only sport that I can think of that's going on. the draft will be next Thursday, but Talladega is coming up this weekend, and that, like I said, that's the Masters of NASCAR is what people are calling it now. I think it's going to do well, so I hadn't really considered that since football was over. Right now, people are pretty much, if they want to watch a sport, they got to watch NASCAR.
Okay, well, we'll see how that plays out. But I understand the frustration. I know a lot of times people, you know, and Texas hasn't always put on the best racing. But I thought this weekend that all three races were really, really good races. And I enjoyed watching all three of them. I watched the truck race. I liked that Corey Heim was so positive about racing with Kyle Busch and how much he appreciated racing with him and what he learned from racing with him. Even though he lost the race, he thought it was good to be able to learn as much as they did from Kyle Busch, and recognizing just how good he is as a race car driver, and especially in the truck series. The second closest finish in the Xfinity series with that race between Ryan Sieg and Sam Mayer. Sam Mayer was back by about a second and a half and closed that gap, which was pretty amazing to watch in and of itself. And then he was saying in his post-race interview, we listened to it earlier in the show, and he gave a very humble interview, I thought. He was saying that what made the difference for him is Kevin Hamlin was telling him where to run on the track. And he said it was a place that he hadn't been running all race long, but when Kevin Hamlin told him that he could get a better run, I forget which lane it was. I want to say the inside lane might have been the second lane. But he did it, even though he hadn't been racing there all race long. And he did improve his lap time and was able to make up that second and a half. So he gave a lot of credit to Kevin Hamlin, giving him that information that helped him make up that difference in order to make it just an amazing finish at the end. I was pulling for Ryan Sieg. I was hoping to see him get his first victory, but you can't take anything away from what Sam Mayer did there at the end of that race as well. But Ryan Sieg to be up there contending for that win, that was an amazing finish. And he's got nothing to hang his head over. He put on a good show, and it was exciting to watch. And there were a lot of different people up in the front based on pit strategies that were playing out. And that's part of what I enjoy watching at these races as well. The tire management and the pit strategies that were going on, you weren't sure who was going to be up there at the end of that race. So that was fun to watch. And then same thing with the Cup Series race. A lot of different pit strategies in play, different drivers having issues throughout the race with those turns over between 3 and 4. And it was a slick track, and so there were a few people that were slipping and sliding. And I got to wonder, I don't know if this was part of that, but and I know we've got some good drivers out there, but some of that, again, might have to do with that tire pressure. So we'll see what happens as they continue to work. And I know this is a 1.5-mile track, and we all know that all 1.5-mile tracks are not the same, even though they get a rap as a cookie-cutter track. Each of them have differences that make them unique. And I mentioned the uniqueness of Texas Motor Speedway and why it makes it such a hard track to race. But I can appreciate where fans are coming from when they say it's not their favorite track. I think it's interesting watching the drivers manage through the challenges that they have to manage through at Texas Motor Speedway. So, Jay, you get the final word there.
Yeah, that's where I say I think, again, of not the most spectacular, the Xfinity Series race, it's not very often we see the photo finish when it comes to Texas. We have seen some good last lap passes, but it's normally not the photo finish that we saw from the Xfinity Series. But I do think it does have something to offer. You mentioned it with the, when it comes to the pit strategy, the tire management, managing the track itself. So I think that is one of those that, yeah, not every track should be easy and to drive around, that you do have to slow down to go faster, if you will, pick a different line and run a little bit different spot. So I think it's a good thing. Like I said, leave it in the spring date here for another year or two and see how the car develops, how the track itself sets. Again, if they don't put the resin down anymore, what's there, how that spreads or wears out, maybe they do have to look at using it again or another one of the Tire Dragon or something else to try and help improve that. That's not the only track, but also then just the development of the car. I think it's ironic that when the car was first designed and developed, that they said this was going to ultimately be great for short tracks and road courses. It came out real good as far as road course racing, but really didn't when it came to the short tracks. And I think NASCAR and the teams are still trying to understand the why, because on paper it really should have. So give that a little more time. And as we said, you know, these top teams especially have people that know what they're doing. They're going to figure it out. And I think between Goodyear with the tire, NASCAR, and the driver's input, they'll work this out, and we'll see some great short track racing again.
All right. Tommy, you get the next hot topic. Where are we going to go?
All righty. Let's see here. Let's go with SHR Charter sale could top $100 million.
Wowie kazowie. Jay, your thoughts about that topic?
Well, and I know this one's come up several times this year, and hadn't really thought about it as far as total. For the $100 million, if you will, that would realistically, based on the last charter sale, only be selling two charters. If they were to sell for $40 to $50 million each, that would become close to the $100 million. There's nothing official yet, but there is a lot of talk within the garage. So generally that means something is afoot, whether it be selling off one or two. The article there talks about the loss of sponsorship dollars and the financial hit that Stuart Haas Racing took with Anheuser-Busch and Smithfield as two huge primary sponsorships leaving the sport for Smithfield, going to another team for Anheuser-Busch. You know, that is a huge hit and a huge undertaking, and I don't think they've quite been able to replace that. Then you're talking about replacing top drivers such as Eric Almirola and Kevin Harvick with drivers that are developing, Ryan Preece and Chase Briscoe. Briscoe had himself a good run, and we've seen that of Sharon, you talked about that glimmer of hope when it comes to Ford as an organization or as a manufacturer, but excuse me, but then also Stuart Haas Racing in the last, I'd say three, maybe four races, we certainly have seen them at least hovering around the top 10 or having top 10 runs, whether or not they get that finish. So there's that hope. Again, I hope to see them build back up. But going back to the actual sale of the charters, here's the twist to it. NASCAR and the RTA, if that's still the name, the Racers Drivers Alliance. Sharon, help me out. I can't think of the – it's called the RTA, right?
TA, yeah. Race.
Yeah.
Racing Team Alliance or something like that.
There you go. Team Alliance. There we go. That's it. They haven't come to an agreement on the new, a new agreement on the charter system. So realistically at this point, I want to say it was Denny Hamlin. because there's several teams that have expressed interest, 2311, Trackhouse Racing, Junior Motorsports, and I don't remember who the four, Legacy Motorsports, of showing interest in wanting to expand or pick up that charter. But as Denny Hamlin pointed out, at this point, they're actually technically worthless because they don't have a new agreement in place. So until that happens, how are you going to risk paying any amount, let alone increasing from the $40 million that was paid for the last one, if they aren't going to have any value anymore? I mean, and that's a scary thought, because especially I think about Spire Motorsports last year, upping it up to paying $40 million for one, and that may end up burning them, because if after this year or next year, whenever that the current agreement expires and they're no longer in place, you just lost $40 million. So that's scary to me. I hope that some type of agreement has come in. I do think that that cost has escalated way too high, but, you know, it's one of those supply and demand. If somebody's willing to pay it, I guess, you know, the price is going to go up.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I'm kind of reasoning through this article trying to capture as much as I can here. I guess Stuart Haas is looking at selling one or two of their charters, and if they're saying $100 million, I'm just wondering, that's not $100 million per charter, is it? That split between the two charters that they want to sell, that's the way I'm taking it anyway. Brendan Poole has a quote here. He says, "You definitely hear a lot of stuff in the garage. I think I definitely know some things that I probably shouldn't know, and I think there will probably be a couple of by the end of the year." So a couple of announcements is, I think, what he means to say there. So, yeah, it's kind of amazing to see an organization like Stuart Haas Racing going through the troubles that they're going through right now. But I think, you know, we kind of saw it coming when we talked about losing Anheuser-Busch from Kevin Harvick when he left. They lost Smithfield when Eric Almirola left. Those were big sponsors in the sport and big sponsors at Stuart Haas Racing. So that's, I can see where that's leaving a huge hole there. And I know that I saw another article where Jimmy Johnson was saying they're still in discussions with NASCAR. They're not talking the dollars and cents yet. He said they're really working out some of the other aspects of all of this. But he said they'll get to that, and that will be worked out. But he's saying we're probably not going to hear anything until closer to the end of this season, maybe around September at the earliest. So it is going to be interesting to see how this plays out, because it seems like the price of doing business is astronomical, and that's, I don't think, healthy for this sport. It also is, that's why a lot of these sponsors are not sponsoring like they used to, and NASCAR's had to come up with some different models of sponsoring. We don't have a title sponsor anymore. We have several sponsors that are sponsoring NASCAR at the top level. So it's become a fact of life. And NASCAR's done a good job, I think, of managing that up to this point. But I think what these guys are asking for, and I know we've heard some of the drivers even say, and I'm talking about driver owners like Denny Hamlin, that say that they're not operating, they're losing money, they're not making money in doing this business. So if you've got a team owner, you've got to have a team owner that's got some pretty deep pockets. We've seen Hendrick Motorsports with the HendrickCars.com as a sponsor on a lot of these cars. So I think that it's something that they really have to look at and see how they can rein that in a little bit to make it more cost efficient, I guess is the word I'm looking for a lot of these teams. But we've also got to be looking at how can we attract more sponsors into the sport, because it's going to take more sponsors than ever before to spread the cost of doing business across the 36 races in the Cup Series. So I don't know what the answer is, but I think that when you've got somebody like Stuart Haas Racing that is struggling the way that they're struggling right now and having a hard time finding those sponsors that they need in order to keep all four cars running, putting them in that position where they need to sell those charters. I know there's people in the wings waiting to, you know, they're biting at the bit. They want to buy those charters, but then the next question becomes who can afford the $100 million it's going to take? And that's on a whole other issue. So there's a lot to look at here, and it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out at the end. I just don't know what the answer is. Tommy, what are your thoughts?
Well, we've talked about SHR a few times this year already. You know, I think downgrading might actually be the move for them. We really need Andy on here to talk about them since it's his team, but I don't see mm-hmm. Chase Briscoe going anywhere. And, you know, if anything, I feel like Ryan Preece is going to be the odd man out. I've heard that they're trying to sell two, but, I mean, you know, somebody's got to go between Josh Berry and Noah Gregson. And, I mean, Kevin Harvick kind of picked Josh Berry, handpicked him. So I don't know if I see Josh Berry going anywhere. I think the 14 and 4 car are going to be the safe ones, and the 10 car and the 41 car might be the ones that go. And of course, they still have Riley Earps and Cole Custer in the Xfinity series. And, you know, in my opinion, I think their Xfinity program's doing fine. I mean, Riley and Cole... I mean, Cole is probably going to win a race if he hasn't already. And, you know, Riley finally won one last year at Vegas, and Riley's usually consistently in the top 10. So I would say the Xfinity program is good. In my opinion, I feel like Tony Stewart has too many interests going on right now, and he's not solely focused on NASCAR. I mean, he's doing the drag racing. He was doing SRX. Maybe he just wants to get out of it completely, and you know, I don't know what's happening there. But you know, earlier this year we were talking about if Honda comes in the sport, who's it going to be? You know, my opinion would have been Stuart Haas because of how terrible they've been this year. But honestly, Ford hasn't been good this year. I mean, none of them really. I feel like Front Row is the best Ford team at the moment because Michael McDowell and Todd Gilliland are running up in the top 10, top 15 every week. And Ryan Blaney and Joey are like the only two Penske cars that are doing good. Brad Keselowski and Chris Buescher are struggling. I just think Ford is struggling in general. And I really don't know. The question is if they sell one or two of the charters, who buys them? I see that being 2311. You know, Legacy Motor Club is now Toyota's, but Eric Jones and John Hunter Nemechek, in my opinion, I know they've only raced like 10, 12 races this season so far, but they're not performing like Joe Gibbs and 2311 are. So I could see 2311 being the team that buys a charter. Because I mean, Michael Jordan doesn't own the Hornets anymore. His sole ownership is with NASCAR right now. And, I mean, Jordan and Hamlin, I'm sure, want to expand. And, you know, I can see them doing it. Maybe Trackhouse. At one point, we were thinking Spire. But, I mean, you know, Corey LaJoie and Hostovar. And I think Zane Smith is like a Trackhouse-Spire hybrid. Yeah, but I could see Trackhouse being the other team that that buys the charter. So, but then, you know, where, I mean, if Ryan, you know, if they buy the charter and Ryan Preece is definitely going to be the odd man out, where does he go? I don't see him going anywhere. Like, if Trackhouse buys that charter, I don't see Ryan Preece going to Trackhouse or 2311. You know, they'd sell two charters. Like I said, I think it's only Noah that loses his ride, but I'm sure he'll find another ride, whether that be back in the Xfinity Series or Truck Series, or if he gets another opportunity somewhere at Cup, because he's had some good runs this year. So, you know what? Actually, RFK would be another one that I could see buying it, because I think Brad Kay has wanted to expand to a third car. Personally, I'd like to see them bring back the Xfinity Series program first. Another wild card here, Salt. You know, Austin Cindric and Harrison Burton haven't ran well this year. You know, just when there's a move like getting rid of two charters, who's going to buy it? Where are those drivers going to go? And there's going to be a lot of moving around. And those are some of the pieces that I see moving around.
Okay, Jay, your thoughts?
Yeah, Tommy might have hit on something. We've seen it with Roush Fenway of the downsizing RCR, another one that downsized to two cars, although they've been flirting again with that third one with Austin Hill we saw this past weekend, that they may have to based on the resources. I would hate to see Tony Stewart get out completely. I know there's always that talk of whether or not he has the interest in it, being that he does have all the outside other interests that he's involved in, but we've seen that with Team Penske as well, so it can be done. Part of it, I know, is, and I think the statement he made earlier in the year of just performance-wise overall,
oh, I've
is
got to
that
interrupt
if something
you,
doesn't... Oh, yep, go ahead.
Okay. I apologize, but we do an announcement for everybody, especially the new people that are tuning in at this time of the show, just to let you know that we're going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 Eastern time. But we are going to continue to record the rest of our conversation, and that will be part of our bonus overtime material on our podcast. I'll go out on Twitter as well as Facebook just to let you know that we have completed the show. At that point, you can go to our player over at fanforracing.com and fast forward to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of the conversation. So, again, we don't want anybody to be caught off guard, and that's why we make this announcement at this part of the show. So, Jake, go ahead and finish up your thoughts there.
Okay, talking about that, if they go down to the two cars, as long as he doesn't float altogether, I mean, if that's his choice, it's his choice. But I think that would be a great loss to the sport of NASCAR. The one Tommy didn't talk about, he made some great points of who could buy it. Can't argue against any of them. Another manufacturing coming in could be a lot of tie into that. But the one he didn't talk about was Junior Motorsports. But there again, Junior has said, I am not paying that kind of money just to get in the door. And if you're talking about NASCAR's previous top driver or fan favorite saying, hey, I can't even get in the door because it would cost me too much, you know, that ought to tell you something. And I'm not saying it's the fix action, but I have never been a fan of the top 35 in points locked in, or the charter system where they're guaranteed the starting spot. I come from dirt track racing, even running national series. You may give up to 3 to 5 provisionals, but other than that, you race your way in. Now, if the charter system were to come to an agreement of, hey, if you're a charter team, you don't make the race, you maybe get a little bit more money for even just showing up, versus that kind of like they do with the winner's circle, that if you're on that, you get a little bit more money. So if you finish last or don't qualify, you may make more money than 30th place finish or 25th place finish. but at least give these teams the opportunity to race their way in. Right now, if you were to come to a race, you are fighting for one of four spots. So you could be the fastest or fifth fastest car there if it so happens that the other four are non-chartered teams, and I know that's a high, real high probability of not happening, but it, theoretically it could. You could be the fifth fastest car there and not get in if those other four cars are non-chartered teams. And I don't like that. Like I said, I think there could be another arrangement made of you get a little bit extra money even if you don't make the race or whatever, compensation for that, that there could be another way to work it out. Again, the hypotheticals are unlimited. I know Tommy was going into which drivers get cut. I'd have to make the argument, and I know that this discussion has come up for, before, of whether or not it's mm-hmm. right, but I believe Noah Gregson brings some sponsorships with him that are paired with him and have stood by him. So I think that kind of is in his favor. Josh Berry has kind of been unproven, as well as Noah Gregson. We've seen some good runs from both of them. We've seen some decent runs from Ryan Preece. I was happy to see him get that opportunity. Honestly, haven't seen it come to fruition as good as I thought it would, and he may be the one at the bottom of the list. However, in his defense, again, you're comparing them to Ford as an organization. Are they doing any worse than some of these other Ford organizations? So can you really put it on them as the driver? I mean, that's a tough call. But the last thing I wanted to say was, going back to the beginning of the year, Stuart Haas or Tony Stewart had made the comment of, if performance doesn't pick up, may need to make some wholesale changes. One of the things we've seen when it comes to Roger Penske, Joe Gibbs specifically, as well as Rick Hendrick with Hendrick Motorsports. Hendrick hasn't been at the races or whatever. Yes, he's still really involved in the team day to day, but it's putting the right people in the right places, key personnel. Maybe they need to shift that up within Stuart Haas Racing. I mean, that's something that's got to be looked at as well.
Yes. This article also indicates that Colleague Racing is kind of going through the same thing. And there's a quote here as what Stuart Haas Racing is going through. And, you know, we've talked about Justin Haley leaving that team last year. His quote here says, I was at a point where I felt like I just kind of plateaued. To a point with respect, I don't feel like there was a clear path to winning races where I was, competitively weekly winning races. Obviously, you signed with RWR, Rick Ware Racing, and I mean, that's not kind of your forward-thinking thing, is to go out there and win races, but I do feel like my runway is longer here. I feel like there are more opportunities down the line. So we haven't heard from Justin Haley as to why he left Colleague Racing and went to Rick Ware Racing. It was kind of a head-scratcher at the time. But he felt like there was a plateau there, that they couldn't do anything more to help him as far as developing his career, and he felt like there was more of a chance for him to do that at Rick Ware Racing. I really thought Junior Motorsports was the organization that might pick up the two cars of their previous drivers. Noah Gregson was a Junior Motorsports driver. So was Josh Berry. I did that the other night. Josh Berry was a previous Junior Motorsports driver, and I thought it made sense that they would pick up those two charters to start their Cup Series team. But, Jay, you bring up a really good point that Dale Jr. has said he's not going to pay those outlandish prices for a charter. So, but, you know, I don't know what happened behind the scenes. There could be a reason why those two drivers went to Stuart Haas Racing, and that maybe there's some kind of backdoor deal, if you will, that's already been established there. I don't know. I'm just speculating along with everybody else here. But I do think that NASCAR has to really take a good hard look at this. I think all the way down the road. Everybody wants to make money, obviously. And if they're not making money with their existing situation, which 2311 has already said that they're losing money, I don't know that I really see them paying out that kind of money either to lose more money. So I don't know exactly how this is going to play out. But I do think that that's what these negotiations are all about, that Jimmy Johnson was thinking about, and that NASCAR and the teams are working together to try to work out a solution. And what that solution is going to be is going to be an interesting thing. I know one of the things they talked about is the media rights program. The drivers want more the teams want more share of that media rights revenue that comes in. And this is the reason why they're asking for more of that money, because these teams are losing money to operate the teams. So there could be a number of reasons why some of these teams are losing money, too. I don't know all the details, but there's a lot to look at here. And I do think that they are doing their due diligence now in working with all of the right parties. They're working with the team owners, the drivers, NASCAR's involved, you know, the team owners are involved. So this is going to, that's why it's taking so long to work out these details, but it is going to be interesting to see what does happen at Stewart Haas Racing. And, but I don't look for a response from them. I don't look for them to be saying anything until that September time frame, and maybe even later. We'll have to wait and see what happens. So, Tommy, what's your final word here?
I forgot about Junior Motorsports, but, I mean, they're kind of like Honda to me and Dodge. We always hear that they're going to come back and that they're going to go into the sport, and then they never do, which, I mean, Junior, like Jay said, Junior said multiple times, he's not going to pay that kind of money, so I don't see him happening, but it is wishful thinking. And then you were mm-hmm. talking about Justin Haley. Yeah, the Justin Haley Daniel Hendrick swap is looking like a bad move for Colling, because Haley has ran better in Rick Ware, and I don't even know if Daniel Hendrick has finished past 30th position this year. So major downgrade for Colling, but honestly, they haven't done that good this year. So, and Rick Ware Racing has surprisingly actually looked good.
Yeah, it's a dilemma, that's for sure. Okay, Jay, do we have one more that we can fit in here?
Yeah, and the other one I know you had put up, Sharon, is the CW actually going to take over the Xfinity race. What is it, final? Oh, I lost it.
Eight races.
There we go. In preparation for that being exclusive home for the Xfinity Series last year. I'm a little surprised at this. I mean, I think it's good, get a head start, but I'm kind of surprised, too, that that FS1, whoever was going to carry those races, let it go, too, that they wouldn't want to finish up their deal.
Okay, Tommy, what are your thoughts about this? The final eight races of the 24 Xfinity Series season were exclusively on the CW.
I got to get more familiar with the CW. I honestly thought that CW was like a political channel or something. So, but I actually looked it up before I went on here and saw that they have like sports channels and stuff, and I don't know. I'm not that familiar with it. I think I was mistaking it for C-SPAN, so I was kind of confused as to why NASCAR was doing that. But, I mean, we all know they're changing. They're going to Amazon next year, or at least Junior is. But, you know, who knows? I mean, they just switched to USA like 1 or 2 years ago. Well, I mean, I have a streaming service. So long as I'm able to catch it, I don't care. But, I mean, it's kind of crazy how they are flip-flopping like that. I miss the days where it used to just be Fox, NBC, or TNT, or ESPN, and call it a day. You could find it and watch it, and that was it.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of saw this and was a little surprised as well. I was fully expecting them to start in the 2025 season, which is what they announced earlier. But I can kind of see where they would do this. We'll have to see how it plays out. All of the Xfinity Series races, you're not going to have to try to figure out where they're going to play at. It's going to be like the Truck Series. We know that all of the Truck Series races are on Fox Sports 1 now. Well, starting with the September 20th date, Friday, September 20th, will be the first race that is aired on the CW network. All of the Xfinity Series races, that's where we're going to find them, is on that CW network. So one of the things that's kind of frustrating for me is I always have to check, is it going to be on FS1 or is it going to be on Fox? And when they go to NBC, is it going to be on USA or is it going to be on NBC? So I always have to check that before the weekend so that I know where I'm going for the race. But now, with this Xfinity Series, starting with that September 20th date, we know where we're going for all of the Xfinity Series races. We're going to be going to the CW network. Now, what's kind of cool about that is they do have an app. I don't know. I'm one of the people that have kind of dropped the cable. I've got the fiber optic internet. And so I do all of my viewing now on streaming services. Well, CW does have an app that you could pick up all of those races. And what's kind of cool about that is that it's always going to be there. After the race, you can still go to that CW app and be able to watch that race. So next year, all 33 of NASCAR's Xfinity Series races are going to be on the CW network. So that's going to be pretty cool. CW does have some sports, some other sports networks and stuff that they work with. I don't know what exactly they are. I don't see it in this article necessarily. I think all of these Xfinity Series races you're going to find on the CW network. So from that perspective, I think that's a good thing. You're not hunting and pecking and trying to figure out where you're going to go to watch the race. It's always going to be on the CW network. So we have that now for the Truck Series races. Now we'll have it for the Xfinity Series races. And it seems to me that they're headed toward Prime Video for the Cup Series races. So we'll see how it plays out, but I think it's a good thing. It's going to be during the chase part of the season when they're in their playoff part of the season, and we'll be able to watch it on the CW network. It's going to be a change. It is going to be a big change for everybody, but I think it's going to be a good change overall. They've got NASCAR Productions is going to be part of the broadcast, so they've always done a good job with putting on these races, and I see them continuing to do a good job with it with the CW network. So, Jay, what are your thoughts?
Well, I really thought you were going to take it from me again, Sharon, but you didn't have the knowledge. One of the things that I will say comes into play with the CW network is right now, Friday Night SmackDown, whether you call that a sport or not, we're not going to have that discussion here and now, but the wrestling Friday Night SmackDown is moving over to USA and Monday Night, and Monday Night Raw is moving to a streaming, I believe, Netflix, over the end of the year and into next year. So I think that kind of comes into play as to why CW got involved. with that, you know, I said it from the aspect of them getting their feet wet and getting ready to cover the whole season next year. But you brought up an interesting point in which it then goes back to my confusion of why the whoever had the rights to it for the final end of the year, you mentioned it, it's their playoff races. That really surprises me now, though, that, and I, like I said, I don't know who had the rights to it, but the fact that they would give up the playoff races for this year. But it's all about business and money on that end. I think it's good for a couple aspects. From the fans, you both already mentioned it, and I know that's a huge thing. You know where to find it. You don't have to guess. And you left a couple out there of when it's Fox, it could also be FS2 in the event of needed.
Yeah.
I know that's not their norm. When it was NBC, it was NBC USA or the NBC Sports Network. I know that went away or went to streaming. So I think that is a huge thing of lock it down. It's consistent throughout the year. And I know a lot of fans are going to appreciate that from that aspect. Now, there again, I think there's some cable companies that maybe don't carry the CW. But as you mentioned, Sharon, they do have the app. So I think that'll be fine. But the whole playoff thing is actually kind of interesting.
Okay, Tommy. Your follow-up.
I don't really have much to add to this one.
Okay. I don't really have much to add either. So, Jay, if you had something more to say, now's the time.
No, I really don't. It'll be interesting to see. I know you mentioned that NASCAR Productions are going to work in conjunction with the CW network, so they're not turning it over to a non-fully sports coverage channel, that they're going to have inputs from both sides, and I think that's a great partnership to have then in working with that. Maybe down the road they do take it over themselves, but we'll wait and see. I do look forward to seeing what they put together. Maybe we can get that back to of what we used to know as the Speed Channel, something like that, where it is a dedicated channel. The other thing I wanted to say is for the Xfinity series to get that kind of deal for their races, I think helps that series, the Xfinity series and that brand. I know Xfinity X10G. I wouldn't get paid. I don't do it right. The Xfinity 10G puts a lot into that as far as sponsorship, the Dash for Cash. So there again, it's just adding to that series. I think that's a good thing as well.
Okay. It gives them a home. I like it. Okay. I don't know if we have anything more up there. Tommy, did you have anything on your mind that you wanted us to talk about?
I can't think of anything else.
Okay. I think we hit all of the topics that we put up here. What about you, Jay? Oh, what about the Brad Keselowski thing? Did you guys catch that? That happened at the end of the Brad Keselowski, at the end of the Cup Series race. They had Byron listed in second, and Brad Keselowski was listed in third. And when Brad Keselowski got out of his car, he said he's not going to claim third until he sees the replay. Well, NASCAR did review it, and they determined, and I've seen a few videos already, and it's pretty clear that Brad Keselowski did have the second-place finish, and William Byron was then credited with the third-place finish. But there was some confusion about that at the end of the race, and NASCAR did have to review video. Did you guys catch that?
I saw your post on it, and actually trying to watch Race Hub right now. I know they're going to break it down. That's one of those that, you know, especially just like a Talladega race where there's such close racing action. You had the incident where William Byron is the one that got into Ross Chastain, obviously checked up a little bit, obviously way too late. But as they got turned around and the cars scatter, once they hit the caution button, throw the checkered flag or end the race, because that does end the race, to go back to – it's not at the end of the race, it's not the previous timing and scoring loop, it is frame by frame of at the exact moment. So initially they did have William Byron, I guess, scored in front of him. Brad obviously felt like and was correct that he was in front when the light came on. They made that change, and I don't know what the time frame was. I know it said relatively quickly after the initial posting of the results that they did correct it. And I like that. I mean, they were aware of it, and they made the change. They went back and reviewed it and made the correct call.
I was happy that NASCAR did do that. Tommy, what were your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I saw that too after the race, but they kind of corrected it quickly. It kind of reminded me of like Daytona like a year or two ago when they had the rewatch the replay over and over, and I think they ended up giving it to Ricky Stenhouse or Michael McDowell. I don't remember, but reminded me of that. But at least they got that situation fixed quickly and got Brad Kay a second place finish that he deserved.
Yeah, I applaud them too for taking care of it very quickly. I think it's also in response to what happened, where was it, Bristol, with the jump on the restart with Denny Hamlin. I wish they would have taken the time to look at that video a little more closely, because the video that I saw after that restart jump, it made it very clear that he jumped the restart. He also admitted that he jumped the restart. And Brad Keselowski, in this case, obviously felt that he did have the second-place finish when that light came on. I'm glad NASCAR did their due diligence in this case and looked at it and could make a quick call on it so that everybody knew at the racetrack how that came down. So I will say, though, when I was doing the review part of the show tonight, in one part, they had William Byron listed in second, and then when we switched over to the actual race results, they had it listed with Brad Keselowski finishing in second. So that makes it kind of confusing when it says one thing in one place and something else in another place. But NASCAR, I know, addressed it very quickly. So and was able to put it out there right away. So I do applaud them for that. Okay. Anybody else have anything else?
No, I think we're good.
Okay, let's go ahead and do our sign-off. Tommy, let's start with you.
At Sis95 fan on Twitter. Give me a follow and see me tweet my diecast, and thanks for having me on tonight.
Yes, it was a pleasure having you on, and I saw your diecast the last couple of days. I've been watching and seeing that show up on the Twitter feed, so thank you for doing that, Tommy. Jay?
You can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. It was great to have you on again, Tommy. I know it's been a while. You haven't been able to get on. I really did just want to hear you say, you said there was at least decent to good racing at Texas. That's all I wanted to hear for tonight. So we're good.
Okay. Yes, Tommy, it was good to have you back tonight. And it's always good to have the conversation here on our Hot Topic Sound Off, and I had a good time with it tonight. Definitely looking forward to our preview show coming up on Thursday with Brian Eberle, and that will be a podcast. We usually do it in the morning. We'll put it out early in the afternoon for everybody to be able to catch the preview show for Talladega Super Speedway coming up this weekend. ARCA is going to be back on track. That's going to be exciting. We've got the ARCA West and the ARCA Menard Series racing in two different parts of the country here, so that's going to be a lot of fun. So, Jay, thanks for being here. Tommy, thanks for being here. And Sal was here for the earlier part of the show, and I appreciate everybody. So, We'll look forward to talking again on Thursday when we do the preview show. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Sharon. Have a good night.
Good night.